This is Wage World, where we talk to the most interesting people in the world on KABF 88.3, the voice of the people.
You want to see how the other half lives? You want to see how we get around? Why don't you come visit me on the east side of town?
This is Wade Rathke, and you're listening to Wade's World, a Voice of the People program. Welcome to the east side of town so that we can talk about how the other half lives and what life is like here living in Wade's World, whether that's the east side of Little Rock, Greenville, or New Orleans, or on Acorn Radio in Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay. Points north and south, east and west. We are either rebroadcast or live streamed at www.kabf.org and www.acornradio.org. A podcast will be available this show on those websites and at www.affiliatedmediamovement.org. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world, and today we're talking to Enid Eckstein, who is a former official of the Service Employees, 1199, a great large hospital union, and more recently has become an advocate and researcher into what hospitals need to be doing about community care. Welcome to Wage World, Enid.
Hi, good morning.
So Enid and I, we've known each other a long time, but I lured her on this show because I stumbled on an article she'd written in Shelter Force. What was that article about? You might as well tell people, Enid.
Sure. The article was an encouragement for community-based organizations, community development corporations, to really be looking at what role the hospitals, the nonprofit hospitals, play in their community and how they could advocate with the hospitals to basically create greater investment in some of the underlying social determinants of health, like education, employment, and housing, to really look at their communities and to encourage investment in some of these programs to basically create better communities and healthier communities.
Who could be against that? So we do know community benefit agreements have gotten some publicity in many cities when it has to do with new developments. People talk about wage rates and whether or not there's going to be amenities and local hiring and things like that. Are we talking about the same kinds of things going to deal with hospitals?
No, thank you. We're actually talking about something that a lot of people don't understand, but really is something that is a legal requirement as opposed to a development where it is all just about how much the community has power to insist upon something. So in order for, and we're just talking about nonprofit hospitals here, but in order for nonprofit hospitals to maintain their IRS status, they're required to basically provide community benefits. And community benefits have gone through many years of discussion as to what they are and what they're not. But essentially, if they're required to provide, you know, care, charity care, because they were once considered charitable institutions, and also to provide benefits that address the health care needs of the community. And in 2014, with the Affordable Care Act, there were new regulations issued by the IRS that tried to actually push this whole discussion into a much more codified process that actually looks at community benefits as also investments to actually address the long-term obstacles or barriers to care. Thus, the whole issue of hospitals can now be encouraged to do more upstream investments.
Now, the Affordable Care Act, and you make this point in some of your research, requires every 2 or 3 years some sort of a community assessment, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So under the Affordable Care Act, hospitals are required to do a community health needs assessment, which means that they have to look at the population that uses the hospital and the service area. So if I'm a hospital in a wealthy area, but I draw my patients from a larger community, I need to look at the whole community, not just pick and choose who I want to do community benefits with. So I need to define my community. I need to do planning and a community engagement process. And then I also need to develop a plan and also an implementation strategy. Then each state depending upon the state, can actually make those guidelines much more actionable through each state has a different process. In Massachusetts, we actually have an attorney general's process. So we have used essentially worked with our attorney general, who is very good in this case, to actually draft new community benefit guidelines that actually go further and define what the investment should be and encourage regional cooperation and greater and transparency. And we have a good reporting system, but that varies state by state.
Well, and I bet Massachusetts is close to the gold standard, so we'll get into that a little bit more. But they're required to do this assessment.
I don't know about gold. I'd say a bronze standard. Maybe,
okay.
Maybe
well, unfortunately, now we're really into the Affordable Care Act. I mean, it's silver, bronze, and whatever.
Yeah.
But I hear you. Bronze is not quite as good as many of us know who listen to this show. So every 3 years they're supposed to do this. Have they done it yet?
Well, I can say that they're required to do it, and, you know, that was what the IRS requirements did. So many hospitals, you know, they're on a three-year cycle. So I don't know nationally. In Massachusetts, I can say all the hospitals have done it. They've actually gone through a few cycles because we have that as a requirement prior. But the hospitals, at least in my experience where I am geographically, and I know I realize I'm in a blue state, and we have some of the biggest hospitals in the country. And they take their community health needs assessment seriously. I think the real issue here is how much community engagement really is there, how much are really more than just the advocacy organizations, but the community organizations that are really struggling to take on what our city looks like. How much are they at the table? That remains to be seen, and my experience is it's all over the map on that.
Well, I can share some of the map with you. Several years ago, I think now more than two, perhaps 3 years ago, after the passage of the Affordable Care Act, in a number of cities where we work, where Local 100 works, and Houston is the one I'm going to use an example, we sent a letter to the CEO of every nonprofit hospital asking for a meeting and or how we could be involved in this community assessment process. And we got a letter back from one who then never would follow up and actually set the meeting. And in virtually every case, we were then, you know, refused any input or access. And that was duplicated again in Dallas and in Little Rock. So I think a lot of people, a lot of these hospitals, and I think it's still true, is it not, Enid, that more than half of hospital care is still nonprofit, is it not? I mean, by the vast majority is still nonprofit tax.
Yeah, a vast majority, but obviously there's some huge, big, you know, hospital chains that,
sure,
especially in some of the geographic areas you're talking about, you know, in the South and the Southwest, have really, really, you know, penetrated those areas. And, you know, what you're telling me about the Dallas, you know, Houston experience is totally what I know and see. Because, for example, I did this huge report that was published about 2 years ago on hospital community benefits in Massachusetts. And
I have it right here with me.
Okay. And
yeah.
So what was really interesting, so we have, like, these very prestigious hospitals, and they all felt like they did a great job in community engagement. But I know my city, and I've been a community activist in Boston for over 30 years, and I looked at the list of organizations that they listed, and I went back to some of those organizations, and they said, oh, yeah, we got invited to a meeting. And I said, well, were you really engaged in this process? And they said, oh, no, they invited us to a meeting. That was it. So, you know, and so one thing I actually am very proud of is that when we issued our report 2 years ago and we talked about the lack of real community engagement, we talked about the fact that the Department of Public Health, the Attorney General, the hospitals, and the IRS were all on a different page, I feel like what we did here was we said that there needed to be alignment of the regulatory framework, and all of it needed to have the same community engagement process, and it all needed to have the same reporting mechanisms. And we did a lot of that. So, for example, now community organizations under the Attorney General's process get to report and they get to give an assessment of what the hospital's community engagement process was, and the hospitals report what they did with community engagement or didn't do, and that actually is part of their reporting, and it's a very detailed reporting form because I helped develop it. So, you know, I feel like it's incremental. It's a very small piece. Ultimately, community groups need to step up and they need to say, I want to be part of this process. This process is really important because, for example, in Boston, you know, like 20% of the workforce works at hospitals. They're part of our, you know, fabric and our economy. And if we're not engaged about how these hospitals invest in our community, we're losing an important opportunity here.
Well, we're talking to Enid Eckstein, who's been active in the healthcare field with workers and as an advocate for communities for quite some time. Now, Enid, hospitals and nonprofit hospitals especially are big employers everywhere. So the kind of process you're talking about that y'all have gotten through, at least in Massachusetts, is something we could all envy and want to know more about. But one of the things your study in Massachusetts found is on average, these nonprofits were hardly spending, was it 1%? I don't want to, you know, gild the lily here, but of their gross revenues towards these kinds of goals. Was that the accurate figure, or what did y'all find?
What we did was, just so we're clear, because the national trends are similar, the numbers are a little different. The question we tried to ask was there any real change in spending post what we had in Massachusetts, because in 2010, we essentially, you know, created universal coverage.
Right.
And so the question we asked was, the fact that we now have universal coverage, has the shift in hospitals meant that they've taken money that they spent on free care or charity care and really moved it to a greater investment in upstream investments? For example, were they doing more about giving money to community organizations? Were they doing more about addressing employment or housing?
And what was and upstream would mean prevention, right?
Well, upstream here in this case is more than just prevention. It's really about how do we address the underlying community health, population health issues. So the perfect example is a healthcare system could put up a mammography van in front of a community health center. That's a great thing to do. We believe everybody should have screening, no issue on that. Want to make sure that women of color have the best, you know, screening for mammography, you know, for breast cancer. That's, you know, that's essentially a medical service in the community. What we're really talking about is how do we address the underlying factors that contribute to a higher incidence of breast cancer in a community of color or prostate cancer. And so that might be, do people have access to high-quality food?
Sure.
Do people have access to programs that alleviate stress or any of those programs? And that's more the upstream. How do we deal with housing insecurity, which is a huge issue? Like Boston Medical Center now screens for housing insecurity when they screen people for health. So how do we change the culture of health so that we're talking about basically, you know, the upstream? Because over 70% of health is determined by not whether you get the best care in a hospital or access. It's about where you live, what you eat, your behaviors, and, you know, whether you live in a safe community. If your child is going to be shot, you know, because they're playing outside in the community because there's street violence, your quality of life is very different from mine, who I might live in a safe street. You know, so those are the questions that are really about population health. How do we change the long-term and underlying indicators of, you know, inequity in our community? So when we looked at this, we saw that there was really not much. We thought that it would change when universal care took place, and it hasn't really changed at all. And Gary Young, a professor at Northeastern, has done the same nationally, and he's looked at the same trends. And even though we use different data sets, our conclusions are similar, that there's very little investment in upstream investment and much more investment in medical services and in the more day-to-day, once the hospitals look at how do they move their care more into the community. And our goal, sorry, I didn't mean to give a long answer here, our goal was really about how do we change the dialogue here? How do we get community organizations to see that they have a role to play, and how do they, you know, demand a seat at the table to have those conversations, because they know best.
Gotcha. So one of the things that might surprise some people is, I think in Massachusetts, you mentioned that some of the nonprofit hospitals put some of their money into affordable housing, which is a crisis everywhere in the country, and leveraged a huge millions of dollars in that way. Is that the case?
Well, I in that so Sheltered Force article, I cite a number of examples nationally. I would say that Boston is in the beginning part of that discussion. Boston Medical Center just recently did something.
Right. That wasn't in Boston, was it? I've forgotten where it was, but it, you know, hit my head so much about $69 million, I, you know, lost the rest of my mind. But where was that?
It was in Portland where they put money in. They put, like, the hospitals put $21 million on the table, and then they were able to leverage other money. But I think this is a discussion that is going on all across the country because, you know, first of all, like, even in Martha's Vineyard, it's kind of funny. You know, the hospital doesn't have sufficient staff because cost of living is so high. So they're looking at how do they take some money and put it towards, you know, housing both for their professional staff and their frontline staff. This is a huge crisis. And
that sounds more like self-interest than upstream community benefits.
But as organizers, we all know self-interest is an important part of the equation. It's not just, charity or, you know, lofty ideals. And in Boston or in Seattle or some of these other cities, you know, we have a crisis. You know, working class people are being forced out of our city.
Agreed. I just hope the community was involved in those discussions.
Well, they need to be.
Yeah, absolutely. But, what I fear and what we're seeing, at least in many parts of the country where we work, is they are being pretty aggressively excluded from any real discussions about these resources. And to the degree the IRS, in Massachusetts, the Attorney General seems like a great model, but where the IRS is the sort of policeman on the expenditures of tax-exempt charity money, they just don't seem to have weighed in at all yet. At least you may have heard differently. I'd be curious.
Well, I actually saw a statistic. I think the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette published this amazing series about the nonprofit entities in their community. And I don't have the site handy, but they quoted, you know, just how, you know, the issue of IRS enforcement. We're talking about hundreds and hundreds of huge institutions across the country, and, you know, like everything else, is understaffed, underfunded. But, you know, they have weighed in on a few places where, you know, institutions have been called to the carpet on their nonprofit status. And I think what you're seeing, which to me is the more interesting thing, is you're seeing elected officials, you're seeing, community organizations taking all sorts of interesting creative solutions about challenging the status of institutions and their accountability to the community. Because the ultimate question is, what is a community getting in return for nonprofit status? So in Boston, you know, we have a pay in lieu of taxes for nonprofit entities where they're required to pay a certain amount of money back to the city. We have a campaign that's trying to put more pressure on the city and on the institutions. Princeton, New Jersey, a group of community activists sued the town of Princeton, Pittsburgh, after this article came out, and series of articles came out, and, you know, the unions and other people were, you know, worked with the mayor, and the mayor got the institutions to put a lot of money on the table. They got invested in, programs that were important for the future of the city and not just money that went to the general fund. So I think there's a lot of activity, and every place it's a little different based upon, you know, what their tax laws are or whatever, and what, you know, how people are looking at the obligation of the nonprofits in their community. And that's not just about hospitals. It's also about universities. That's a whole other discussion.
And I noticed when we talk about property tax exemptions, which some local authorities give to nonprofits, and including nonprofit hospitals, is that, in your observation or from what you've seen, is that widely, are those benefits widely given to hospitals? Because I think that's the case down here as well.
I think that, well, it's up to the state to do it, but I think it's pretty universal. I don't know off the top of my head if all 50 states do it, but I certainly know it's an issue, in many areas. And, it definitely creates pressure on a lot of cities because, like, for example, in Boston, we don't have an income tax, and we are limited in how much we can increase our property tax because we had Proposition 2.5 passed, you know, like 30 years ago. So it definitely puts pressure on the city. when you, you know, have, and we have large nonprofits. Not only do we have hospitals and universities, but we have our state government here, and they also are taxed, as well as we have a huge public transportation system, and that is also taxed. So we have all these, you know, we have a lot of land that are taken off the public rolls, which means the tax burden obviously shifts to residential and commercial taxpayers in a given city. And this is an area, this is like happening all across the country in, you know, major metropolitan areas, because a lot of this land is taken out of the, is taken off the tax.
One of the difficult problems, and we're talking to Enid Eckstein, who's been involved in healthcare, both in terms of representing workers and now in terms of community benefits from hospitals, particularly nonprofits. One of the issues is there's no real clear standard for what would constitute an acceptable level of charity care, is there, or how to define it from the IRS, for example?
No. And, you know, in Massachusetts, where we weighed in on some of these questions, you know, the variety between what one hospital does and another is, you know, quite wild. And in Massachusetts, our community benefit guidelines are voluntary guidelines. They're not a regulation, although I would say the hospitals follow them fairly. You know, they try to live within the framework. You know, there's great variation, and what we attempted to do in the most recent round of improving the guidelines was to try to create some level of standardization of reporting and what really constitutes, you know, a community benefit. Because, for example, one hospital reported in their community benefit spending a program that was totally, you know, marketing. It was, for example, you know, advertising their services at a sports event, and, you know, having their signature all over the sports event. And this was for a professional team. It wasn't for, like, a small community hospital. So, you know, we see a lot of things like that that counted as community benefit. And that's where I feel like community groups and vigilance and transparency is really important. And, you know, I say to community groups, we need to first start off seeing what is it your hospital reports, really understanding it, understanding what the community health needs assessment says about your community, and then holding your hospital accountable to that. And I feel like people can do that no matter where they are, because, you know, there is transparency. Even if your state doesn't have good transparency, there's transparency through the IRS 990 reporting process, and you can get those. They're all online. They're all public, you know, publicly accessible.
But so realistically, Enid, I mean, I've, you know, for the last several years, I've had a team of volunteers from Tulane and the University of Ottawa going through every 990 for every nonprofit hospital in Texas, Louisiana, and Arkansas. They're all different. I mean, yeah, you can look at Schedule H or whatever all you want, but then you better be prepared to climb some mountains to find out what, how many places the CEO is paid, whether or not they're counting the difference between reimbursement rates and, you know, what they end up getting as charity care. You know, your sports example is a great one. I mean, I'm not saying these are criminal enterprises, but boy, I mean, it's a job to go through these 990s.
It's totally a job, which is why, like, you know, I feel like the other thing you can, you know, people could certainly be encouraged to do is, you know, like, everybody loves transparency. Transparency is, you know, is something that's a good government. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, we've really done a lot of in Massachusetts is to insist that there's transparency, you know, the Attorney General. So the Attorney General's reporting process is all online in Massachusetts. So the hospitals file their reports with the Attorney General, and their reports are way more up to date. And there's a different mechanism, so they have to really summarize. They have to break out their spending. So, you know, and we tried in the new guidelines that go into effect this coming year, we went much further, and, you know, actually, you know, have different ways of quantifying how hospitals spend their money. Are they in the bucket of social determinants of health, et cetera? So I feel like, you know, that's a place where wherever you are, you know, there are things that people could pass, you know, through either a regulation, through getting their state to have an advisory or something that basically, you know, is something about greater transparency and helps break it down into some standardized way. Luckily, in Massachusetts, the Attorney General posted all the numbers, so we just downloaded all the numbers and were able to sort and, you know, show really interesting patterns that they had never looked at themselves.
Well, if Massachusetts is the bronze standard, is there a better situation, some other state?
You know, I feel like the question is, what are you asking? Is there a better method on community benefit reporting? I don't know. Like, you know,
is there a better, you know, accountability standard that any state is using with nonprofit hospitals on this subject of benefits to the community?
Well, for example, like some states require have the state pay back to a community. What the city loses through, its tax exemption. So I feel like there's pieces that other states do or other places. So it's a checklist, and it's like, well, how does this help us? We might have a better community engagement process, but we don't, given the fact that we're so heavy on nonprofits in Massachusetts, we really need to look at what is the loss to our tax base. So that's a whole other set of questions.
And that's a good set to look at. I mean,
right.
You know, I give it Herman Memorial, huge, you know, $2 to $3 billion operation in Houston. Charity Care, you know, less than 2% in terms of what they say. Ochsner Hospital, huge nonprofit chain throughout southern Louisiana. 1%. We calculated just on what we'd done on 990s that if they just hit the average of what all the nonprofit hospitals claim to use as charity care, about 2.8, 2.9, it would mean an additional $500 million spent in these three states. And some of these states, like Texas, didn't even expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. So we really need, it's good to talk to Enid Eckstein about work in Massachusetts and elsewhere, because we're really going to have to hold some of these nonprofit tax-exempt hospitals more accountable, aren't we, Enid?
Yeah, and I feel like, to me, as an organizer, you know this, that we hold institutions accountable by, like, educating community organizations about this, and then we try to think of a strategic process plan to do it. And I'd like to say we've spent some time and resources in Massachusetts doing this. I've done with other people. We've done a lot of, training of community organizations. They're trying to look at their own individual communities and their hospitals more strategically. Where, we have a group that's looking at this whole issue of tax exemption in Boston that's been pretty active. So, I feel like my job is kind of taking my bits of knowledge and trying to seed different organizing plans and strategies and finding my partners along the way, some of whom are community development corporations, some of whom have been, community organizations that are fighting gentrification, and then, pairing also with people who are interested in making sure that, the institutions play fairly within our communities. And that's, like in some areas, like in Boston, where we've had huge expansion by some of these nonprofit entities, into the community and displacement. These are hot issues.
Absolutely. Enid, for those people who want to hold their hospitals more accountable and follow some of the Massachusetts model, is there a way to get a hold of you, or if they have further questions, or a website or anything else?
So I can do two things. I can give my email. So I just give that to you now?
Yes. There we go, on the air.
I just didn't know you. Sometimes it's like you get it off air or whatever. It's Enid, as in dog, A, Eckstein, Eckstein, all one word, at Gmail. That's probably the best way to get a hold of me.
Great. And the article, the long report you did on Massachusetts, you want to tell people how they can get that, the one you did with Dr. Hadness?
Yeah, I don't have the website, but if they go to community, they Google hospitals investing in community and community catalysts, they'll find it. It's a report that really looked pretty extensively at the hospital system at the community benefit system in Massachusetts. It got a lot of play, and I'd like to say that the recommendations that were issued, I think, really sort of called into question the fact that we just did not have a good alignment here. And since then, the regulatory framework has been overhauled.
We can hardly wait to join that fight. This has been Wade's World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard, and as Lucinda Williams sang, things you've never seen and will never forget. As the song goes, we say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Till next week when we'll have another guest, this is Wade Rathke from Wade's World. Thank you.